From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Jesse Jones is late. He was supposed to be here.
Well, yeah, he texted us that he was en route from the Carter Studios.
Big TV people, right? They think, oh, I'm not on radio. I'm on TV time. You guys are taping this, right?
No, Jesse, we're live.
What's that thing? Man, all right. But Jesse's going to come in as soon as he gets here, and I will proceed to make fun of him. But then what we can also do is we can talk about collusion when it comes to rent prices in Seattle. Now, people have noticed. I've looked at the data on it. People have noticed that rent has increased tremendously since the pandemic, whereas previously a studio apartment might have cost somebody somewhere in Seattle proper, somewhere around the neighborhood, about $1,200 to $1,500.
Correct.
Now you're looking at $2,000 to $2,500 for that same studio apartment.
Yep.
Laura, you've experienced this yourself, right, in your apartment hunting?
Yes. It was a drastically different landscape than when I was looking 5 years ago.
Right. Yeah. And what people are turning to now are these micro apartments, which are basically, no offense to the fine purveyors of micro apartments.
Sure, but live small, they say.
Live small, they say. They're basically like slumlords. I'm looking at some of these micro apartments that people are showcasing, and I understand that people are, they have to have a place to live. I'm not coming down on anybody for renting a micro apartment. But when you look at it, It looks miserable to
just,
put it.
Just put a Murphy bed in there.
Just put a Murphy bed
you
in
just
there.
Just fill it up every day, and then you're basically not sleeping in your kitchen.
Or you could always eat dinner and lunch and breakfast on your bed.
Which you're probably doing anyway.
Which you're probably doing anyway,
so.
Because your feet literally touch both your kitchen and the bathroom at the same time in your lovely little micro apartment. Or even, you might not even have the luxury of having a bathroom in your apartment.
Well, what people are finding is what apartments are available, the prices are being managed by a handful of companies that own all the properties that are talking behind your backs in dark rooms with cigars. Used to be in a dark room with a cigar. Now they're colluding to make sure that they can set the price for each apartment, regardless of who owns it.
Right. And I'm just watching everybody in the
studio. Building's hugging
everybody
Jesse.
In the building is hugging Jesse Jones. Everybody's like, hey, what are you here for? Who are you here to talk? Oh, you're talking to Jack and Spike? Oh, look, there he goes again,
no.
Mr. Charismatic.
What's happening is everybody says, Jesse, I got this problem. Can you help me out? Jesse. They're saying, Jesse, my car won't start and the mechanic's a bum. Can you help me out?
Exactly.
Because Jesse Jones is the guy people turn to when no one else can help.
This is very true.
Oh, man.
Jesse Jones.
Oh, man.
Finally, after months of trying.
What is going on?
Same old, my friend. How are you? You doing well?
I'm not doing too bad, you know?
I appreciate you rushing over from Cairo 7. I will say, Jesse, the first time you and I are meeting in person, I didn't realize how tall you were, my friend. You are, you can play basketball, man. You are incredibly tall.
Nah, man, I'm like, no. Shaped like a baked potato.
Don't malign the baked potato, my friend. Were you ever an athlete in your earlier youth? When I met you, when I first met you, I think you were doing still in sports when I first met you, right?
Yeah. I went to Montana. I went to Foss High School.
Mm-hmm.
Played football there. Got a full ride scholarship to Montana State University.
Nice.
Went there. Played
with the Wildcats.
Bobcats.
Sorry, my mistake.
Bobcats was there, played 4 years, got a tryout with the Green Bay Packers.
There you go.
Got hurt, got cut.
That's what happens to 99% of the people who do this.
Yep. And then fell into the wonderful job of nightside receptionist and teleprompter operator at KSTW-TV.
That was your in, huh?
Back in Tacoma.
And then when did you end up becoming this beacon of an investigative journalism? Because when I see a Jesse Jones piece on Cairo 7, I'm thinking to myself, Jesse's got the scoop on whatever this is.
Somebody's going down.
Right, yeah.
Well, back in 2005, I mean, I've lived and worked all over the country. I worked in Baltimore. I worked in Cincinnati doing, you know, investigative news. I can tell you stories about Baltimore.
I know. We've talked. My hometown. It's not my hometown anymore.
Oh, but you know what I'm saying.
I do. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I left here and there were like, you know, 30, 40 murders. I land there and they're cooking at about 300.
That's the day board, 30, 40 murders in Baltimore.
Yeah.
That's
the really,
day.
Really,
wow.
Yeah.
Really quick story. So it was my first day on the job, actually on the air. They had me in Ellicott City doing a story about some Civil War cemetery, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, it was the Mason-Dixon line.
Sure,
there.
At so, Maryland, Pennsylvania line, yeah.
Right, right. So, you know, I'm there and I'm doing my whole thing. You know, I'm fresh out of Seattle. I don't know what I'm doing. We're driving back and we get a call and it's like, hey, there's been a double homicide, right? It's like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. There's been a double homicide. Here's where it is. We need you to stop by, talk to the cops, and then, you know, get your story. I'm like, oh, okay. So we're driving down and all of a sudden I'm thinking, hey, I'm going to lead the show. A double homicide in Seattle?
Sure.
In, you know, 1993? I mean, you're leading every show.
You bet. Yeah.
So went down there, did the interview, called the station. I'm like, hey, you know, when's the live truck coming? And they were like, Jesse, it's just a double homicide.
Just.
We hope we can squeeze you in.
Okay, just talk to the cop.
Yeah.
Come back and write your little story. And I was like, whoo.
You're in a different world.
Whoo.
Well, that's the way the media landscape has changed over the years, I think, where now we're doing stories about, you know, a group of kids between the ages of 12 and 15 stealing Kias and Hyundais. And that's all over the place. Yeah, everybody wants to talk about that.
Become numb to that.
Yeah. Right. So I think that one of the things that's happened is that people have moved away from the spectacle of homicides. And now it's about a different kind of crime, right? They want to see it. It's weird because it used to be this individual murders his wife or whatever it might be. And that was going to be, you're running with that for a week. Now it's every other day. Mm-hmm. This group of kids runs into this sunglasses hut, steals a bunch of sunglasses.
Smash and grabs with stolen cars every day.
Right.
Well, remember, I mean, there's two things here. One, crime is what touches you. So when you start thinking about 12 and 13 year olds putting a gun in your face,
yeah,
you know, that becomes the story because that is what is touching people. Homicide is just, you know, the most raw, the final judgment,
yeah,
the biggest crime you can commit. And so we have an attraction to that. But if you talk to any criminologist, trying to get a hold of a homicide number is the hardest thing you can do because it's just, in a way, random in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But this other stuff that's going on with these 12, 13, and 14-year-olds is crazy.
Yeah.
And I feel for everyone involved in this thing.
When you look into it, what do you think is the underlying cause? Because we get a lot of people saying, well, it's the policies that are put forth. You have other people saying, well, it's the lack of funding in schools. You have other people who are saying, well, it's the fact that Dow Constantine's trying to get rid of the juvenile detention centers. I'd be curious for your perspective.
If the village, there's an old saying, right? If the village does not wrap its arm around these children, they will burn it down so it feels the warmth.
Yeah.
Damn.
Okay.
That's poignant.
Yeah.
Man. That's so true.
Right. And we're just not connecting with these kids. If you take a look, the first thing you want to get rid of when you're talking about education is all the things that makes kids want to stay and give them a chance. Let me tell you something. I grew up, I went to Foss High School, 1982 graduate. Let me tell you, there were some cats, maybe even including me, that if we didn't have a football coach yelling at us, some of the guys having music classes and having that, Lord knows what some of these cats, what some of these cats would have been on the street doing.
Yeah.
I mean, legitimately, tough homes, tough neighborhoods, but they didn't want to miss practice.
Right.
Then you get teammates and you don't want to let your teammates down. And that means if I do something stupid, it means I'm going to be out of my circle. Now, you have a lot of things out there, and these kids aren't getting involved in this stuff. You have to go reach out. I'm a member of this group called the Breakfast Group, you know, and we're out there trying to get with these kids and help them grow up and come up with these programs, right? And so that works, but that's not everywhere. And we have to find a way. If we don't touch these kids, the kids will touch us.
Yeah, I think I said that less eloquently about an hour ago, and everybody called me a snowflake lib.
Oh,
but when Jesse Jones, Jesse Jones says it, it's gospel, my friend. So you did this piece about rent collusion, and when I moved into Seattle proper, I was looking for just a little studio apartment, and in my mind's eye, I thought, I'll probably, and Spike, you know this, you can attest to this, this was a fact. I said, I could probably find a place for about $1,400.
Yeah. And ask what kind of car you and what kind of commute time
you'd be
looking at, because you're not in the city of Seattle for that kind of money anymore.
So I find basically two options. One of those options was an underground torture dungeon, which this woman from Eastern Europe was willing to rent to me, where the windows were basically like windows in prisons, you know, just the slats.
They were 6 inches by 12 inches in at the ceiling of the apartment.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And she said, oh, by the way, you have to share the laundry room with us. And I said, well, where is the laundry room, and she showed me via FaceTime down a concrete corridor that went down through the basically the belly of the house to this laundry room. And she goes, there's no locks on any of these doors. So I said, what you're telling me is that anybody can just walk into this space that I'm renting at any time. And she says, yes, exactly. So my other option was a $2,300 a month, 800 square foot studio, which was marked down because the contractors forgot to put up a retaining wall. And so rather than it being a one bedroom, it just has a closet sitting in the middle of where the bedroom should be. And so they call it a studio apartment.
Oh, man.
So when I see your story about collusion, I'm thinking to myself, it feels that way, right? It certainly does, because it doesn't feel like I'm getting my money's worth for that apartment based on the size of it.
So basically the story was about these price algorithms, right? So there are a couple of companies, Yardi Systems, they're being sued. And these are the allegations. I'm just saying these are allegations. And RealPage, right? And what happens is they have this software that manages prices of all the places all over. So you have 9 or 10 or 15 or 20, right, rental companies that are putting their numbers into this machine. Now it spits out, hey, this is what you should charge, and this is what you should charge. The allegation is that's collusion, because then they can choose to keep the rents high because they know what everybody else is charging.
Right.
They can keep the rates high, or they can actually keep spaces open, so they create a little bit of, you know what I'm saying?
Like flow through? So how isn't this just a free market dictating what people can charge? How is it illegal? Where's the illegality
coming? It's the Sherman Act. The Sherman Act says basically groups can't get together and come up with prices and do that all together in collusion. That's why they call it a cartel.
Okay.
Right? You can't have a bunch of businesses sit down, as it's described, in a smoky room and decide, hey, here's what we're going to do. This is what we're going to charge for apartments these days. What they're saying is that this software, that's the allegation, that the software that they're using does just that. Since all of these companies use it, they use the software. That means they know what the prices are, and they can charge whatever they want, but they're actually colluding to keep the rates high. The companies will tell you, right? And we talked to, I got a letter after we wrote the story. we tried to talk
now
to them.
Now they want
to
talk.
We tried to talk to RealPage. RealPage did come back, and they said, well, we send out, these are recommendations. And so we can, you can take them high, you can take them low, you can forget about them. It's on the person. It's not on the software.
Okay.
Which makes sense.
Yeah,
which makes sense. But, I mean, DOJ is looking at this. There are two class action lawsuits. The state of Arizona, the District of Columbia are all going after both groups of these companies, which include some of the largest companies in the country. When you're talking about rentals, I'm talking about Graystar and Thrive. I mean,
and is this kind of the nationwide trend? Is it fewer and fewer companies own more and more and more of the market, so they can dictate what 2,000 places all sell for because they own them all or rent for?
Here's the thing: when I was renting my place, I thought that I was renting from a rental company that I was meaning this on one set of documents, it's the building, and then I get another set of documents and it's Graystar Incorporated.
Oh, okay.
So I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, who am I actually renting from here? Because it doesn't. Am I renting from this random incorporated business in Tennessee, or am I actually renting from this building in Seattle? It doesn't make any sense. So
that's how they control multiple properties.
Right.
But let me just throw a twist in here. As cities and states start adding more regulation to ma and pa landlords, right? The landlords, the ma and pa landlords would be the person, they could just undercut all of this. They could just undercut it. They know what they're charging
there. I
like
you. You're a good tenant. You're reliable. I'll give it to you for less.
We'll just under, but now you have rents high, and now you're giving more regulations. You're just heaping regulations on these mom-and-pa landlords. That means their rates are now going up. They have to.
Yeah.
So now this, you know, there's this momentum that rates are going to go high for everybody. So what do we do? That's the question.
Yeah. How do you help the people who need a place to live?
That's the question.
I've heard people say that we need more building permits, and they need to be more accessible for people. So if they do want to build a triplex, then they should be able to do so without NIMBYs coming in and saying, I won't have that in my neighborhood.
Right.
Well, then the question then becomes, you know, parking and all of the other things.
Oh, yeah.
And that's part of the whole NIMBY thing. But I believe, truly, we just need the rooms. We need the space. We need the housing. I don't care about your car. I really don't. I really don't.
Yeah.
You know, we need to put people in homes. And so if you're worried about your car, then that's your problem. That's a you problem.
So I've been renting this place now for about 6 months. And I was talking to Spike about this a couple months ago, but there was units that were sitting empty. And they were just sitting in for months. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. I thought that they'd be...
Well, it's a nice place.
It's a nice place to
live.
Very
conveniently located.
And
then
I saw furniture popping up in some of these units. And I thought, obviously, people are moving in. No. What I found out, and I talked to Spike about this, is that they were repurposing these empty apartments because they couldn't rent them out because the rent was too high as showrooms so that they could write it off.
Oh,
and I thought,
man.
So rather than drop the price, right? So the person who lives two doors down from me when they moved out, that's now a showroom. I see people coming in. Your apartment could look like this. The apartment across from me is a show apartment. Nobody lives. It looks nice. They got books and magazines, and they've got.
And they're getting the tax write off. They're not losing a dime.
Exactly. So you've got probably four or five apartments in this apartment building.
Every layout configuration is available to show you.
It's a showroom. Wow. And then all of a sudden, when they find somebody, they move all that furniture out, and then, hey, here's your brand new apartment with your brand new flooring. Jesse Jones, thank you so much for coming in,
my friend.
We appreciate it. You can find Jesse's piece over at Cairo7.com. Title is Jesse Jones Lawsuit Claims Biggest Landlords in Western Washington Are Colluding to Raise Rents.
And you, Jesse, I know your team, you're a Pulitzer Prize finalist. Cairo and 7 Investigates?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Congratulations, my friend.
Well deserved. I had no idea.
Well deserved, man. You do phenomenal work. And I know hundreds of people that'll so glad you're in town.
Hey, we got a good team. I'm blessed.
Jesse, will you come back and hang out with us in the future, my friend?
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, the ex-Starbucks CEO, Schultz, says that the company needs to refocus on coffee as sales struggle. I think he's missing the point.
Oh.
I think he's evaluating the wrong problems here.
Okay.
We'll talk about it when we get back right after this.
I'm getting you a friendship bracelet.
Or based.
Daddy needs his Mr. Beast. Cringe or based. The fun game we like to play every single day, trying to determine if a cultural event is cringe, meaning ugh, or based, meaning ah. So the former Starbucks CEO, Howard Schultz, said the company's leaders should spend more time in stores and focus on coffee drinks as they work to turn dropping sales around, right? The revenue dropped 2%. Oh, geez, whatever will we do?
That's significant.
Whatever shall we do for this multi-billion-dollar conglomerate that sells people poison and diabetes? Oh, my heart breaks for the people who... Whatever shall we do, Spike? I am forlorn, my friend. Tragedy befalls Starbucks mega corporation, which rapes and pillages the lands of countries that we can't even pronounce. Tragedy befalls this coffee giant, putting small mom and pop businesses out of work forever. My heart breaks, shatters. Thousands of pieces fall into my Frappuccino with 73 grams of sugar in it, and I drink it so that I might die an early death of diabetes. Take my foot, Howard Schultz. Take my foot. I don't need it anymore. Bring me more coffee.
So when you said you had the answer to his problem, I'm assuming you're not going to tell him. I'm assuming you're not going to tell them how to fix this problem and make me even more money.
I still know how to solve. I know how to solve this problem. I know how to solve this problem.
Good.
So basically, when we think about, let me just get this out of my system really fast.
Sure. Good luck.
I do not care if megacorps have a hard time. I don't care. I don't care. I care if mom and pop businesses have a hard time.
Right on.
That's what I care about. I don't care about greedy megacorps. I don't care if it's Starbucks. I don't care if it's Walmart. I don't really care. Doesn't make any difference to me whatsoever. I care about the people who work for those businesses. I do not care about corporations. We in the United States have been tricked into thinking that somehow corporations are this legitimate business venture, right?
They're people, my friend.
But they are not. Corporations are entitled to legal protections that human beings are protected to. This is absurdity of the highest order. We should do away with this. Corporations are a Frankenstein-esque construction of what a business actually is. So when they cry, boo, we're 2% down, I don't care. We should really get over it. But the way that you can fix this problem goes as follows. Everybody knows Starbucks is bad for you. Everybody knows this, right?
Okay.
If you're, I got a list right here of these Starbucks coffee drinks with the amount, most, you know, the average amount of sugar is in any Starbucks drink. Average between all, not talking about Americano, not talking about black coffee.
Okay. Probably 30 grams?
50.
50,
50
oh,
grams of sugar, which is the entirety of your recommended daily intake, which includes natural sugars. So fruits, starches, things
sure.
of that nature, right?
And so forget the three meals you should be eating a day. You had one cup of Starbucks. That's it for the day.
Your pancreas is basically like Sigourney Weaver in Alien when she's like, kill me. Remember her clone? Kill me after you drink a couple of those. The highest sugar content is in the peppermint white chocolate mocha, which is Laura's favorite. Do you know how many grams of sugar are in that, Spike? You want to guess?
110.
73.
I went too low last time. I overcompensated.
I mean, it's really, well, you can get up to 100 if you do all the sweetener add-ons and so on and so forth.
Dripping a drizzle.
So what Starbucks needs to do is it needs to get away from all of these kinds of what I will refer to as white lady drinks, and they need to get back into the world of just regular coffee beverages. If I want a nice chai or a nice tea, I can't go to Starbucks because it's got 50 grams of sugar in it.
Even those?
If I, oh, yeah, because they add this, the sweetener.
Syrups, yeah.
And even if
yep.
I say no thank you, they say, well, our concentrate already has 30 grams of sugar. And then I go, okay, why isn't it just a regular chai tea? Because it's concentrate from the company because they want to force feed me sugar and kill me.
That's not what the white ladies want,
right,
Jack.
Exactly. So
it's
the white ladies want, you know, congenital diabetes is what they want.
They want a fun little drink. And I will say, if Starbucks stops catering to the white ladies, they will lose the majority of their customers.
You think 2%'s a hit?
Laura, you've uncovered my ruse. I'm trying to bring that business down. If I want a matcha tea latte, which should have maybe 2 grams of sugar in it. Do you know how much it is at Starbucks?
30?
32 grams on the dot.
I went back to my original bit. I learned.
So
adapted.
I mean, this is the problem that the chai tea latte, 42 grams right there.
What about when you add the lavender cold foam?
That's for sure going to be another.
You think I'm making up words?
No,
that's
no.
A real thing.
I
yeah.
know it is.
So the problem with Starbucks is that if you look at the menu, it is also basically indecipherable. Because if I go in and I just want a regular coffee, I have to choose between pumpkin cream cold brew, cinnamon caramel cream cold brew, cinnamon caramel cream nitro cold brew, iced apple crisp oat milk macchiato. These are the names of adult film stars. Do you know what I mean? These are not drinks. These are adult iced cinnamon dolce latte.
Yeah,
seen
she's
that
dancing
movie?
On the main stage
hey,
for you right now.
Dancing on the main stage, am I right or am I right? Nick, pull me up a little Def Leppard really quick.
Woo!
Pull me up a little Pour Some Sugar on Me, because if we go through these names, these are the names of strippers and adult film stars, right? This is literally, when you read, this is not drinks for normal people. These are drinks for people that have no personality. And so they ascribe their personality to a product for it to be consumed. An iced white chocolate mocha is not a replacement for having interesting things to say. Laura, what are you trying to say to me right now?
Have you tried the new spicy lemonade refreshers with spicy cream cold foam.
I would never. The only time I ever go to a Starbucks is when I'm visiting my ex-wife and she says, I'd like a cold brew. And I go, where do you want to go? And then she goes, let's go to Starbucks. And then I go, I see why I left you. She says, what? And then I say, nothing. I said, I see why I left you. I'm not going to Starbucks.
Love you. I said, love you.
I said, love you. Exactly. It's just like when the business model of Starbucks has been uncovered, which is not caffeine and delicious beverages. It is a delivery mechanism for the most addictive substance on God's green earth, sugar. White sugar is the devil. We need to get rid of it. We need to stop messing around with it. And I'm saying it all the time, but everybody else is like, boo, Jack, I'd rather have my Ozempic. Why are you such an elitist? Why are you such a narcissist? Because I want you to live a long and fruitful life and keep all of your toes. And I'm the bad person because I want people to live healthy lives. This is madness. Laura, what's funny? What's funny, Laura? This is a sickness in society that I'm trying to uncover, and you're over there cackling at me. What's going on?
It's just wrong.
How am I wrong?
Again, like, you would lose your customer base. And it's interesting that Howard Schultz, as the former CEO, is looking for more premium coffee experience. If I want a premium coffee experience, I don't think of Starbucks. And I think it would cost them a lot of money to get back into that space in a real way. They really are the fun little drinks emporium.
You ever see the movie The Founder? The Ray Kroc movie about McDonald's, right? There's a moment in that movie, an epiphany, where the guy, I think it's the guy, P.J. Novak, says, you're not in the burger business. You're in the real estate business.
Exactly.
Right? And a light bulb goes off. Starbucks isn't in the coffee business. You're in the milkshake business. You're in the sugar, fatty
drink.
What
a frappuccino
drink.
Is.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. Let's go get some coffee.
They're in the sugar business.
Yes.
In the same way that Pizza Hut or Little Caesars is in the bread business, they're not in the pizza business.
Right.
They are in the carbs business, which is why whoever thought, hey, you know that dough that we use for pizzas? What if we just put butter and cinnamon on it and cover it in syrup? And we got dessert for
dessert
everybody.
Dessert twist.
Exactly.
Eureka.
We got dessert. And what if we put like icing on that? And what if one season it's pumpkin icing and then another season it's peppermint icing? Genius, right?
Limited time only.
Can Starbucks make a lavender Ozempic cream?
So what Starbucks has got to do, they just got to get back to making regular drinks for regular people. I overheard a conversation between two homeless people outside my window last night that made me very upset because I'm listening to these two homeless people talk about what they are owed. Now, I am very sympathetic to homeless people. I was homeless myself for about a year. I'm very, very sympathetic to the plight of homelessness, not to this degree. Because the conversation that they were having, I want to tell people about it because it was the most entitled, out of touch, bizarre conversation I've ever heard between two young men smoking fentanyl I've ever heard in my life. And I used to freebase heroin on a regular basis. I've sent some wacky things in my life. Never anything this wacky. We'll talk about it when we get back right after this. I'm upset about two things right now that I have to talk about. One is about local homeless people, but the other thing is about Fox News. Andrew, will you do me a favor? Will you get the producers at Fox News on the line? Because they have this feature right now playing of the fallout from the tornadoes that ripped through Oklahoma the other day.
Yeah.
And I just want them to know that filming a toothless woman in a Walter White t-shirt weeping in front of the destruction of her home, although that might seem like good content, it's actually a very damaging trope.
it's hard to look at, but hard to look away, though, right?
But that's what I'm saying, is that the producers intentionally tried to find a toothless, obese woman in a Walter White t-shirt weeping in front of... Now, listen, I like to make fun of people all the time. I refuse to laugh at somebody's misery and suffering.
Yeah.
And if you prostitute that as a network, whether you're CNN or Fox or whatever it is, for shame is what I say.
I hear you, man. That's a horrible situation.
And
now let's go into her underground bunker. The only thing she has left.
Hey, the only thing she has left is a waterlogged underground bunker. So I overheard a conversation between two homeless people outside of my window the other day because they were using the alcove in my apartment to smoke fentanyl. I know this because this essence of fentanyl was coming right into my apartment.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Is that dangerous? The after?
Are you kidding me, man? I was hanging my head out the window huffing, baby. I want to get a free high. Are you out of your mind? That's what I was doing.
Hypothetically.
Hey, you guys, blow some of that sweet God juice up here. Daddy wants to fall asleep tonight, baby. All right, so.
It's dangerous, right? Am I right?
No.
It's not?
No, it's not even bioavailable.
Okay.
No, it's
okay, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Right, so, but these guys are standing outside my window, and they're smoking fentanyl. It's coming in through my window. So, of course, me being the person that I am, always on the lookout for sweet, sweet content, I say, I shall affix my ear to the window, mayhap, and I shall eavesdrop on these two young rapscallions. And as they are smoking fentanyl outside of my very expensive apartment, I overhear them saying that, and I'll name them homeless guy. One homeless guy will call him Earl, and the other homeless guy will call him Bob.
Okay.
Earl was saying to Bob that he believes that every homeless person in King County is owed $50,000 because of the cruel and unusual punishment that has befallen them by not offering them housing. And so between fentanyl hits as they're freebasing, they are discussing the logistics of how to get said $50,000, which of course involves petitioning the city to give,
okay,
you know, 16,000 people 50K apiece.
Uh-huh.
And that their argument, at least in their minds, in their drug-addled brains, was airtight because it is cruel and unusual to quote unquote force people to live outside. The irony was not lost on me, right? The irony of this circumstance was not lost on me whatsoever. And so they were saying that as soon as, and the plans went from we're owed this to as soon as we get our $50,000.
Oh my God.
This is what we will be doing with it. So if you want to know what Earl and Bob thought that they were going to do with their $50,000.
Oh, I'm intrigued. Yeah.
Obviously, it's not going to be taxed because, you know, why would it
be?
They've
suffered enough.
So they would each pitch in to buy a van, at which point in time they would drive around the country looking for work in said van as a duo, because if they combined their money together, then they would have $100,000.
Oh, yeah.
And then as soon as they found work, then they could find an apartment together, and then they could work, and then in their own kind of drug kind of world, they said, then we can base whenever we want to, meaning that they can then freebase whenever they want to, right? They can smoke whenever they want to.
Sure, they're geniuses.
They can chop whenever they want to chop, as we used to say back in the biz,
uh-huh,
back in the day. And as I'm listening to this, as I'm taking this in, I was just thinking to myself, you know, these guys are clearly trying to imagine a world which is better for them. And that, in many ways, is very, very sweet.
Sure.
But the entitlement of I am owed this money.
Oh, it's 50K.
50K apiece was the dollar amount that they ended up on.
That's almost a billion. That's $800 million.
Yeah.
So if you do 16,000 times 50 each, it's $800 million.
Right.
When you first told me the story, I'm like, well, maybe that's a better way to use the money as opposed to going through bureaucracy and hiring this commission and that commission.
Sure.
But not at $800 billion. That's a little deep.
And I told you this off air, but I said the thing is that they were going to, that's how they would get them to leave, right?
And a bus ticket.
Exactly.
Well, no, they're going to buy a van. They don't even need the bus. But you got to leave the county. Here's your money. You got to leave the county.
Right. That was their big thing, is that they would promise to leave. And I just thought, you know, you guys, like, as a former drug addict myself, is a great way to save a lot of money, potentially $50,000.
Yeah.
It's called stop doing drugs. It's a really great way to live.
After a while, you can buy a van.
citing offenses against God, a local church has cut ties with the Children's Hospital nonprofit. Sad story, but we're going to get into it because I think it just goes to show how hate-filled people are. Seattle gives asylum seekers living in the Central District notice to leave. Of course.
This is the park where the...
Yeah, just go somewhere. Then that'll solve the problem. Won't end up in a completely different park. Charlie Kirk's UW visit ends on a tense note between fans and protesters. People are silly. We'll talk about it when we get back right after this.